It's 5 minutes with me.
Hello, friends. Welcome to 5 minutes with Marco. It's going to be a little more than 5 minutes today. We got the beginning of a two-parter here on presence as a priority in the practice of our youth ministry. And each half of it, sorry to say, I don't know, feeling long-winded or something. Each of them are slightly more than 5 minutes, but not crazy. Still, short. Okay, let's dive in. I see the kingdom of God in less black and white frames these days. In fact, to say it's full grayscale doesn't even do it justice. The kingdom of God deserves a color palette so broad, deep, and rich that we don't have names for all the nuance and variation. I try to resist also the urge I still possess to reduce dialogue to discussion. Discussion has its Latin roots in to smash apart or to scatter or disperse, and shares some same source code with the word percussion. Dialogue implies two-way or three-way or more conversation, give and take, listening. All that said, I'm still intrigued by opposites. Lately, I'm rediscovering how some apparent opposites are actually two sides of the same coin. It's pretty difficult to separate the two sides of a coin. I mean, I suppose with great machining skill, one could slice a coin down the middle, but it would cease being a coin. Suffering and hope are that way, I've learned. Two sides of the same coin. And I've learned several years ago how letting go of security and gaining wisdom fall into that truth pattern. But sometimes things that appear to be opposites are, well, truly, really opposites. And a move to the opposite is what's called for in the world of youth ministry these days, a move away from being driven to being present. Obviously, I'm an American, and we love to think of ourselves as wildly independent. One doesn't have to travel the world much to discover this uniqueness. To take it a step further, we actually like this about ourselves. It's part of our country's founding principle. We will be independent from you, and no one can tell us who to be. In the church, we want so desperately to be independent mavericks, a Christianized version of the Marlboro Man, riding through the landscape of culture, needing no one, emulating no one. But if we look carefully at the churches we've lauded and lifted up in the last 40 years or so, we're really not all that original. Most of the time, we are acquiescers. We're copiers. We copy culture. We convince ourselves we birthed it. And then we copy other churches. Really, what's independent or mavericky or unique or even interesting for that matter about building a cool youth space these days, complete with comfy used seating and a hip art on the walls? Take a slow browse through a youth worker Facebook group these days, and you'll regularly see youth workers asking for input on their meeting space and how to make it more attractive. Nothing original about that, partner. We love to copy each other. And in our rarest moments of honesty, we might be able to admit that we love being copied. Being copied is, after all, about the highest form of flattery a church or professional Christian can experience, right? And while we might not all be copying each other every day and whatever church du jour is offering up, we're ultimately copying the values of the culture around us. And those values for the past five decades or so have rested on variations of being driven. This is old school. It's saying how old I am. But do you remember the 80s movie Wall Street, anyone? Starring a young Michael Douglas and an even younger Charlie Sheen. That film didn't only depict the excess or risk of materialism and greed. It was a great or horrible snapshot of being driven. One of the most classic lines of the film occurs when Charlie Sheen's character, a wannabe financial player named Bud Fox, asks Michael Douglas's character, named Gordon Gekko, if he would be willing to have lunch. And Gekko responds, "Lunch is for wimps." In other words, I'm more successful in life than you because I am 110% completely consumed, driven by this singular passion, in that case, making deals. That, my youth worker friends, has been the spirit of the age for the last handful of decades. Sure, we put a nice spiritual glaze on it when we copied it into the church. After all, we value being driven for the glory of God. Just look at our superstars. They are mostly, with a handful of wonderful exceptions, hyper-driven, type A overachievers who leave us all gasping and self-flagellating, wondering how they accomplish so darn much. We respect their drivenness. We covet their drivenness. Sometimes we even worship their drivenness. Oh, that youth ministry had sashayed past this, but we didn't. I didn't. My suggestion in a book I wrote more than 15 years ago was that youth ministry was proclamation-driven from roughly 1945, when the modern era of youth culture and youth ministry stepped onto the scene, until the late 60s and early 70s. Youth workers responding to a call from God to contextualize the gospel for teenagers in their world were missionaries by impulse. They were passionate, driven, you might say, by the idea that the spoken word, when wrapped in youth-friendly language and topics, could bring change. Now, I'm not questioning the potential power of preaching, nor am I for a second questioning the motives of those early youth workers. It was the culturally appropriate youth ministry approach for its time, whether it was biblically or theologically informed or not. As the church woke up to the need for effective youth ministry, approaches pioneered by those proclamation-driven first-wave youth evangelists were co-opted and modified. A massive shift took place, though few saw it at the time. The shift, in a nutshell, was a move from "we'll bring the gospel to you" to "come to us to get the gospel." That might not seem overly significant, but it ushered in a host of other tweaks and truncations. One of the primary shifts was in the driver. Proclamation was no longer the main focus, and youth ministry in the church became program-driven. There are lots of good and not-so-good reasons for this, and we don't have time or space to go into detail here, but I'm convinced most youth ministry continues down this path to this day. It's not that programs are bad, per se. They're just the things we do. But a focus on programs as the driver, is lopsided at best and completely unbiblical at worst. Again, I'm not questioning the motive or the motivation of youth workers. I'm questioning the assumption, the driver. The seduction of this approach was that it worked for a while. It worked for a few decades. But times have changed, and youth culture has changed, and teenagers have changed in some ways. The "if you build it, they will come" field of dreams approach just isn't attractional enough anymore. In our next week's episode, we're going to unpack what should we do about this.
The Youth Cartel Podcast Network.